Where your treasure is, Jesus said, there will your heart be also. We've heard those words so many times that we may miss their stunning reversal of our usual way of thinking about giving. What we expect him to say is that we lead with our hearts. If your heart is in the right place, you will share your treasure. If our hearts lead us to be generous, then we will give generously. But what Jesus says is something different. He says that if we lead with our treasure, our hearts will follow. Look for where your treasure is invested, he says, and there you will find your heart. A treasure is something we value, not so much for the thing itself, but because of the value we invest in it. Some memory gives it value, or the way it connects us with someone, or the time and energy we spend acquiring it. What is it that you treasure? What is of most value to you? Family, home, community, your portfolio, your memories? How about time? I remember a favorite fictional character who once said of his life, back there at the beginning, as I see it now, my life was all time and almost no memory. And now, nearing the end, I see that my life is almost entirely memory and very little time. What is it that you value? What is it that you treasure? Show me your treasure, Jesus says, and I will show you your heart. As people of the gospel, Tom Long says, what our hearts really desire, of course, is to count for something and to count to someone. To come to the end of the day or the end of a life with the satisfaction of having stood for what is good, with the joy of having been loved and having loved well in return. These are the gifts, with the peace of having walked with God. These are the true treasures, the treasures of the kingdom, a fortune no thief can ever plunder. The decision whether to store up treasures on earth or treasures in heaven, Long says, is not one of mere financial planning. It is one of basic orientation. The call to store up for yourselves treasures in heaven is not a question of prudence. It's more radical than that. It's a question of vision and freedom, what a person sees and what holds a person captive. If a person sees life as a gift from God, a bountiful outpouring of God's providence, then that person is free to hold possessions with a light grasp and be generous toward others. On the other hand, if life is seen as a competitive struggle between winners and losers over limited resources, then one is slave to the struggle, and the only viable creed is, where's mine? Tom Long's words make me think of a blog post a few years ago by the Quaker educational theorist Parker Palmer, who always seems to make good sense to me. Palmer was sharing thoughts about the importance of engaging the big questions in life. He spoke of a question that had become important as he was entering his 70s at that time. He said, I began pondering a question I thought of as a good one. What do I want to let go of, and what do I want to hang on to? But the more I lived into that question, the more uneasy I felt about it. So I asked a few friends to help me explore my uneasiness. By the end of that session, my question had morphed into something better, I think. What do I want to let go of? And what do I want to give myself to? What do I want to hang on to, he said, is a clingy question with a whiff of desperation about it. But what do I want to give myself to is an open and generous question. And that question has taken me into places where I have found new life, and I am grateful. What do I want to give myself to? That seems to be another way of asking, where do I want to invest my treasure? Knowing as I do from Jesus' words that my heart will then follow. Today, I invite and encourage you to think about your treasure, that which you value and cherish, and what you will do to invest that treasure beyond yourself, knowing that if you do, it will not leave your heart unaffected. More particularly this day, I'm asking and inviting you to invest your treasure here, in the life and worship and ministries of Old First. Invest enough of your treasure that your heart may follow. And if you do, and if enough of you do, it will help us to develop a greater strength and flexibilities for the ministries we care about. It will help us, perhaps, to fill a pastoral vacancy or to expand our work with children and families or to broaden our outreach to the community beyond these walls. But just as importantly, such investment will enlarge your own heart. I know it will, because I've seen it happen. Michael Jenkins wrote several years ago about a luncheon he attended once when he was on the faculty of Austin Presbyterian Seminary in Texas. The luncheon was to honor a wonderful man, the late Ed Vickery, who was an attorney and a banker in Houston, whose generosity to theological education was legendary at the time. Several members of his family spoke that day, including his daughter Anne, and she related something that had happened that very morning as they were on their way to the luncheon. Having forgotten to check how much gas they had in the tank before leaving Houston, they actually ran out of gas on a lonely stretch of road halfway to Austin. A phone call later, a young man from a gas station in the next town arrived. He put enough gas in their tank to get them to his station, where he filled up the car and they were ready to resume the trip. After the bill was settled, Ed handed his daughter two $50 bills to give to the young man. She said, "Daddy, I'm sure he'd be more than happy with one of these." To which Ed responded, "I don't want him to be happy. I want him to be ecstatic." Have you ever known people who relish generosity in such a way? I have. And I've always wondered about what set them apart. Was it their hearts that were large and the treasure just naturally flowed from them? Or did their habitual practice of generosity enlarge their hearts? Michael Jenkins argues that generosity is the consequence of gratitude. Whether we're expressing our gratitude towards someone who has helped us out of a jam, or we're helping someone in desperate need, whether we are extending care to an individual we know or developing social structures of economic support to make the world more just, whether we act generously in big ways and small, whenever we do, we are reflecting gratitude to the giving God. We're also reflecting the character of this God who throws lavish parties for prodigals and pays ridiculously high wages for embarrassingly short hours of work. Perhaps this sounds strange, Jenkins says, but I think the meaning of life is stewardship, which is just another way of saying that the meaning of life can only be expressed in words like gratitude and generosity. What do you treasure? What do you treasure about this church? What is it that stokes your gratitude? What are your best hopes for our church family? Are you willing to invest your own treasure, your time, your energy, your resources to help make these hopes into a reality? Where your treasure is, Jesus said, there will your hearts be also. Ed Vickery, I mentioned a few moments ago, loved being generous. He loved leading with his treasure. And because of that tendency, he developed a wise, gracious, and generous heart. But one does not have to be wealthy in order to lead with one's treasure. I heard some time back the story of Osceola McCarty. Osceola McCarty was an African-American woman from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. As a young girl, she dreamed of being a nurse, but she had to leave school after the sixth grade to take care of a relative who was sick, and after that went to work, as many of her ancestors had, the washerwoman. For 75 years, McCarty washed and ironed and folded the laundry of the wealthy bankers and lawyers and doctors in town. She earned just pennies, but she tried to put away whatever she could, eventually starting up a savings account at the First Mississippi National Bank. McCarty lived a simple life. Her treasures on earth seemed few. She lived in a modest frame house just blocks from the campus of the University of Southern Mississippi. She didn't get an air conditioner until she was up in her 80s, and then turned it on only when she had company. She never owned a car. She walked a mile each way to and from the grocery store. She went on Sundays to the Friendship Baptist Church, carrying a Bible held together with scotch tape, always tithing her meager income. When she got to be 87, her hands gnarled with arthritis, she had to retire. She began to put her affairs in order and decide what she wanted to do with the little that she'd been able to accumulate. Shortly thereafter, the development office at the University of Southern Mississippi received a phone call from the bank. The bank had a check for them from one Osceola McCarty, a check for $150,000. No one at the school had ever heard of Osceola McCarty. She had actually never set foot on the campus. This washerwoman, who had never been to high school, let alone college, gave away virtually every dollar she ever made for a scholarship fund for minority students. The gift made front page headlines. In an interview shortly thereafter with the New York Times, shortly before she died, McCarty was asked why she didn't spend that money she had earned on herself. She smiled and said, "Oh, I am spending it on myself." Reflecting on that comment, Presbyterian pastor colleague Wallace Boober said, "I don't know exactly what Jesus had in mind when he said that we should store up for ourselves treasures in heaven, but I suspect Osceola McCarty knew. I suspect she did. And my hope is that in time, all of us will know too. And so as we prepare to make our stewardship commitments a little later this month, I offer Parker Palmer's two questions for your own reflection. What do I want to let go of? And what do I want to give myself to? I ask you to remember the importance Jesus assigned to how we handle our treasures in life. He said that if we lead with our treasure, our hearts will follow. It's rarely the other way around. For where your treasure is, he said, there will your heart be also.